Today finds us starting chapter 13 of the book of Revelation. We're in a pause here as far as the chronological order of the book of Revelation goes. The main portion of the book of Revelation, from chapter 6 through chapter 19, has to do with the last 7 years on this earth as we know it, called the 7-year tribulation time. It's known as the 70th week from the book of Daniel. Daniel was praying, and he said, "Lord, what are you going to do with your people and your nation?" And at the time, they were in captivity in Babylon, and their 70 years of captivity was just about up, and Daniel was wondering, "What's the plan, Lord? Are we going to return to Jerusalem, and then what's going to happen?" Well, Daniel was told that the Lord had plans, and it was going to take 70 weeks, not 70 weeks of 7 days, but 70 weeks of 7 years each, for God to accomplish all his plan perfectly. Well, 69 of those 70 weeks have already come and gone. The 69th week ended with the Lord coming into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday and then being crucified. The 70th week awaits some key items. When the Antichrist signs a peace treaty, when Israel has a peace treaty for 7 years, that will start the 7-year tribulation time. The Mosque of Omar, the Muslim shrine currently on the Temple Mount, will be destroyed. The temple will be rebuilt. Sacrifices will be started. And we will have basically a time of peace in the beginning half of the 7-year tribulation time. All of that changes at the midway point. 3.5 years into it, the Antichrist sets himself up alone to be worshipped. Then there will be great persecution the last 3.5 years, and that is called the time of great tribulation. At the end of the 7-year period, the Lord Jesus Christ will return. We will read about that in chapter 19 of this book. There are three series of judgments that move through the 7-year tribulation time. The seal judgments start the 7-year period. In chapter 6, when the first seal was opened, the rider came on the white horse, conquering with a bow but without arrows, and sort of bringing peace and organizing the world. Well, that was the Antichrist working through the world system, organizing globally, achieving a peace treaty with Israel, and any man that can do that can do a lot of other things. And the world is going to be very prideful, I think, at this time. They're going to be full of humanism to the nth degree, saying, "Look at what we've accomplished now, we can do anything." But then came the second, third, and fourth seals, where war broke out, and famine, and death, and a fourth of the world was destroyed. And that's going to be right around that midway point. The Antichrist is going to be demonically possessed, empowered, and he's going to reveal his sort of true character when he sets himself up alone to be worshipped. Now, as we come to chapter 13, we're going to find out more information about the Antichrist. But again, I want you to understand that this is a pause in the action. Chapter 6 had the seals being broken, the first six seals. Chapter 8 had the seventh seal being broken, which ushered in the trumpets. Now, the trumpet judgments devastated a third of the world. A third of the vegetation was destroyed, a third of the salt water, a third of the fresh water. And then the last trumpet judgments, the fifth and the sixth, brought demonic hordes, destroying, first of all, tormenting men for 5 months, and then destroying a third of the world that was left. Well, with that, we came to the seventh trumpet, and that sounded in chapter 11. The trumpet judgments probably take us through the midway point and on into the second 3.5-year period, somewhere in the middle of that second half. And the seventh trumpet has already sounded, and that's going to bring forth God's final judgment, which is called the bowls of wrath. We're going to see those in chapter 16. Now, when the seventh trumpet was sounded in chapter 11, we saw a vision in heaven, and the temple opened up, and there was rumblings and peals of thunder and lightning. Well, that scene is going to be picked up again in chapter 15. We're going to see the preparation in the temple in heaven of the bowls of wrath. In the meantime, we pause right where we are. The seven seals have been opened. The seven trumpets have been sounded. We're waiting the seven bowls of wrath. But there's a pause, and chapters 11, 12, 13, and 14 find God in this book of Revelation giving us some extra inside information about certain particulars that are taking place during the tribulation time. Chapter 11 showed us the two witnesses that God will have and how they'll go around the world proclaiming the gospel. Chapter 12 showed us sort of the battle of good versus evil, Satan trying to thwart God's plan, especially with the birth of the Savior, and Satan not being successful, and then that whole battle sort of zeroes in on the tribulation time, and Satan is thrown out of heaven, and he comes to earth, and it's an intense time. It says his fury is great because he knows his time is short. So Satan is really involved in the earth, and that was sort of chapter 12. Well, chapter 13 now shows us especially where Satan is going to be involved. He's going to be empowering the Antichrist. And the first half of chapter 13 shows us the Antichrist, this individual. Satan is also going to be involved in empowering the false prophet. And the second half of chapter 13 is going to show us the Antichrist's right-hand man, his false prophet. And when you read the descriptions here in chapter 13, you'll see how the whole world will be deceived. This is very impressive description of how these two men are going to proceed and take over. So with that in view, let's go to God's description of the Antichrist and his false prophet. Revelation chapter 13. Starting in verse 1. And the dragon, there's Satan, stood on the shore of the sea. And I saw a beast coming out of the sea. He had 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns on his horns, and on each head a blasphemous name. Well, that's certainly enough for us to start out looking at. We pause right there after verse 1. The dragon represents Satan. Satan is standing on the shore of the sea, and then this beast comes up out of the sea. It's as if Satan is sort of beckoning him forward. And I think that's a good picture. Satan is influencing events here on this earth, and he's going to be especially working through the Antichrist. Now, the sea here would be a reference to the Mediterranean. The beast comes up out of the sea. Some say it's up out of the sea of humanity. Not bad. I mean, this beast, this Antichrist, is going to be just a man from the sea of humanity. But I like to specifically think of the Mediterranean Sea. In Daniel, we're told that this Antichrist, this ruler to come, will be of the people that destroyed the temple. Well, the temple was destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD. So I believe the Antichrist will be of Roman extraction, or if you will, he'll be Italian. And when you look at Italy, it sits right out in the middle of the Mediterranean. It sticks right out there. So up out of the sea, you could say up out of the Mediterranean area, there will come, I believe, this Italian. Now, he's called a beast. Please understand that that is God in his word revealing the truth, telling us that this man will be a beast. What does that bring to mind when you hear he's a beast? Well, it brings to mind power and destruction. Well, that's what this man is going to do. He's going to be powerful, and he's going to be very destructive, especially to the saints of the Most High God. But having said that, we need to understand that the world is not going to look at this man and say, what a beast. No, the world is going to look at this man and say, what a great statesman. He's going to be instrumental in getting peace between the Arabs and the Israelis. He's going to get that treaty signed. He's going to, I think, bring order out of the chaos that follows a pre-trib rapture, with the global economies and communication systems upset, with the rapture of maybe some key people involved in various places. There's going to be looting, perhaps, and riots and panic. And out of that disorder, the world leaders are going to meet, and I believe this man is going to be very influential. He's very shrewd. As we read about him in Daniel and as we read about him here in chapter 13, we can come to the conclusion that he's going to be a very wise person, very deceptive, very manipulating, very powerful. So the world is going to say, what a great man. And I happen to believe he is going to be Time Magazine's Man of the Year, and he might be it 7 years in a row, just about. So he's going to be perceived by the world as a great statesman, a wonderful, quote, political savior. Well, he's coming out of the sea, and then the statement is made, he has 10 horns. Do not think graphically. Don't think, well, how will 10 horns look coming out of his head? That's not the point of the text. Horns, throughout Scripture, and even literature of that time period, had a single clear meaning. It stood for power. Whenever I think of horns, I always picture those two bighorn rams up in the mountain smashing their horns together, and usually the one with the bigger horns is more powerful and wins. Well, horns refer to seats of power. The 10 horns refer to what the other verses here in Revelation, especially in Daniel, tell us will be 10 kings or kingdoms. around the Mediterranean area, up out of that sea, around that area, are 10 nations that at this time will be united. Now, many people see great significance in the fact that the European community now has 10 member nations. That's interesting, and I won't get upset if they move up to 11 nations or 12 nations or go down to 7. I do know that at the time of the Antichrist, there will be, though, 10 seats of power. This confederation will be the basis of his support. And again, I think it'll come from him unifying the European community. It's sort of a revived Roman Empire. Well, he has 10 horns, but then it says 7 heads. Again, don't think of 7 heads. Think of 7 heads of state. 7 could be the number of completion. It could mean that he has this 10 nation confederacy, 10 horns, seats of power, and then all the other heads of states around the world will be a part of his system and go along with it. Or out of the group of 10, I think it could also have reference to 7 particular heads out of the 10 seats of power. Now, if you subtract 7 from 10, you get 3. So if there are 10 horns but only 7 heads, something happened to 3. Well, as we get a little bit into the beginning of this chapter 13, we're going to see in verse 3 something about a fatal wound. I happen to believe that has something to do with 3 of the other horns. And it might be the reason why those 3 horns, those seats of power, don't end up being heads with crowns on them, because those 3 might lose their heads. So the 7 heads could be 7 out of the 10 actually had heads of state, although there were 10 horns, 10 kingdoms, 10 seats of power. Or it could be the 10 nation confederacy with 7 being the number of completion, with the other heads of state going along with it, either way. But I'll show you a little something from Daniel that'll make it a little clearer in a moment. Notice it says on each head there was a blasphemous name. Now, there are 10 crowns on the horns. It is said elsewhere that he sort of rewards people for supporting him. And until the Antichrist sets himself up alone to be worshipped, I think he sort of buys the support of these other rulers. And this 10-nation confederacy has, I believe, the Antichrist sort of parceling out crowns, areas to rule. They're sort of divvying up, I think, the world in some regards. So they have 10 crowns. And then it says each head has a blasphemous name. They're going to be blaspheming. These rulers, and especially the Antichrist, are going to have boastful mouths. They're going to be deceptive. They're going to manipulate people through the media. And they're going to be blaspheming God particularly. And some more specific statements are made about that later on. So what characterizes this empire, if you will, from God's view, it's the dragon, Satan, who's calling it forth and influencing it. The world will think it's a great ruler. God says it's a beast. He's powerful and he's going to be destructive. It's sort of like having a tame beast in your house. Yeah, here, kitty, kitty, right, until it starts to reveal its claws. And that's how this beast is. And he's going to have this confederation supporting him, and it's going to be based on blaspheming God and the truth. Verse 2, "The beast I saw," John writes, "resembled a leopard, but had feet like those of a bear, and a mouth like that of a lion." Well, these are 3 references, again, that come from the book of Daniel. There were 3 empires that Daniel saw. Nebuchadnezzar had some dreams about the coming empires. In the book of Daniel, we see leopard, bear, and lions, but in reverse order. We see the lion first, then the bear, then the leopard. That is because when you're back in Daniel's day, 500, 600 BC, it's the lion, Babylon, that's there. And from Daniel's vision, what comes after the lion, Babylon, will be the Medo-Persian Empire, which was characterized as a bear. And after that comes Alexander the Great and the Greeks conquering the world, and that's a leopard. Well, seeing it from this side, from the AD side, 95 AD, looking backwards, you see most recently Alexander the Great. And he conquered the whole world for Greece with the speed of a leopard. And then before him was the Medo-Persian Empire, the bear, and the Babylonian Empire. What verse 2 is saying is that this beast, this world system, is going to be similar to all the great world systems of the past. I believe the Antichrist is going to be a shrewd student of history, and he's going to study empires and rulers, and he's going to see how you successfully rule an empire, and he's going to have components that were found in Alexander the Great's empire, in the Medo-Persian empire, and in the Babylonian empire. So he's going to take the best of all those empires, and he's going to succeed beyond any of those empires. Now, verse 3. Oh, I'm sorry, the end of verse 2. The dragon gave the beast his power, his throne, and great authority. There we see Satan empowering and or possessing this man. Now, when we see the beast, we can be thinking of the individual, and that usually is what comes to mind initially in my way of thinking, the beast, the individual. But we can also be thinking then of the whole system. We speak in the similar way when we talk about Hitler. We say Hitler and you think of the individual, but we say Hitler invaded Poland. Well, it wasn't just Hitler walking across the border. It was his whole empire invading. So when you see the word the beast, it characterizes the individual, but it can also characterize his whole system, and it includes the satanic influence in there. The dragon Satan is going to give the beast his power. Satan's power is going to be behind the beast. It also says the dragon gave the beast his throne. Do you remember in Jesus' temptation, that's one of the things Satan presented to Jesus? He showed him all the kingdoms of the world and said, here, I'll give you this. Well, Jesus refused because it's going to be all his at the end of chapter 19, and he's going to reign for 1,000 years in chapter 20 of the book of Revelation. But right here and now, the beast is going to be handed the kingdoms of the world. He is going to be a world ruler. And he has great authority, again, through the dragon's influence. Now, verse 3, one of the heads of the beast. Now here the beast characterizes the whole system. One of those 10 seats of power, horns, or one of those 7 heads, you could say, seemed to have had a fatal wound. Now notice how it's phrased, seemed to have had a fatal wound. It's going to be a deadly wound. It isn't going to be truly fatal, but the world is going to think it was a fatal wound. It seemed to have a fatal wound, but the fatal wound had been healed. I believe this is a reference to an assassination attempt on the Antichrist. As he's rising to power within this confederation, I believe that of the 10 kings involved, 3 of them are sort of going to be wise to the Antichrist. They're going to be alarmed, and they're going to say, wait a minute, this individual is got some other plans, and I think they're going to try to thwart him, and they're not going to be successful. I believe, though, they are responsible for giving him this fatal wound, and again, I envision like an assassination attempt. Now, notice what happens. It seemed to be fatal, verse 3 says, the wound, but the fatal wound was healed. Well, I go right back to verse 2. I believe Satan's power is going to bring about healing. Now, I don't think Satan has the power to raise someone from the dead. So this wound wasn't fatal, and this isn't a resurrection. But I do believe Satan has power to heal. As you listen to some of the teaching of so-called healers, you realize they aren't from God. They are not teaching what the Scriptures say. And yet, in some cases, they seem to have some powers, some miraculous signs associated with them from time to time. I happen to believe that's Satan empowering these deceptive teachers just enough to allow people to be led astray, those who will ignore the truth and go for healings or signs or miracles. Well, that's what's going to happen here. Satan, I believe, is going to be involved with his power and authority, and he's going to heal this Antichrist. Notice the last statement of verse 3. The whole world was astonished. I think this is going to be a fake resurrection. They're going to be astonished, and it says, and they followed the beast. Notice what verse 4 says specifically. Men worshiped the dragon because he had given authority to the beast, and they also worshiped the beast and asked, who is like the beast? Who can make war against him? Those who tried to make war against him, who tried to assassinate him, seemed to have been successful, and all of a sudden he comes back perfectly healthy, healed. I am resurrected. I am invincible. You can't stand against me. I am God alone. And I think this occurs right around that midway point when he sets himself up in the temple to be worshipped alone. Well, to understand this assassination attempt, we go back to Daniel 7. And I really believe what you'll see there will be convincing. But I should mention at this time that some see this wound not being a reference to an individual being wounded, but the system that seemed to have been wounded fatally comes back. And what they see is sort of a revived Roman Empire. the Roman Empire was ruling in this territory in John's day. It since crumbled a couple hundred years later, but to see it come back and have its power, it supposedly amazed people. If we saw the European community now dominate the whole world and take over, we would be amazed. Well, as I read these verses, I don't see that. I see an individual. I see the world looking at a man who seemed to have been killed coming back invincible. I don't see the world saying, oh, look, a revived Roman Empire, you know, who can stand against it necessarily. So to me, it's a much more individual reference. But the key, I believe, is in Daniel 7. We go to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel, in the second half of his book, was given great visions about God's plans for his people, Israel, and his city, Jerusalem. We pick it up in Daniel 7, verses 7 through 8, and then we jump to the explanation in verses 19 to 28. Daniel 7, verses 7 and 8. After that, in my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. Now, the fourth beast has a reference to the fourth kingdom. The Babylonian Empire was the first, the Medo-Persians followed, they were second, Alexander the Great was third. Now, the fourth kingdom was the Roman Empire, but it's sort of a foreshadowing, a picturing of the ultimate kingdom that's coming. So the Roman Empire did come as the fourth kingdom, and it lasted quite a long time, but it's going to be in the days of the 70th week of Daniel that this beast, this fourth kingdom, this Roman Empire area, again rises to prominence and has world domination. There's that fourth beast, terrifying, frightening, very powerful. It had large iron teeth, Daniel writes. It crushed and devours its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. Now that's a reference clearly to Revelation chapter 13. So we're talking here about something that was sort of foreshadowed with the Roman Empire, but is now shooting way ahead in the future, and it shows us specifically the last days with the Antichrist. This pattern shows up repeatedly in the book of Daniel in these last chapters. They'll tell us something about Alexander the Great and his empire. And Daniel in his chapter will see visions that are remarkably accurate, and historians agree it shows exactly what happened with Alexander and then his demise and his splitting the kingdom with various generals and the general from the north attacking from the south and the east. And all the things that the book of Daniel writes about, you see them happening. But then at the end of the chapter, it'll all of a sudden jump ahead and it'll make some statements that did not occur in the days of the Ptolemaic reign and so forth, did not occur in the days of Alexander and the days that followed. They are references way to the future, to the Antichrist. And I think that's what we see here. Well, this beast is different from all the others. There's never going to be a world empire like this one. And it had those 10 horns that we saw in Revelation 13. Now, verse 8 says, while I, Daniel, was thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn. So we have the 10 horns, but here comes another horn, a little one, which came up among them, and here it is, and 3 of the first horns were uprooted before it. That word uprooted is a powerful word. It really speaks of pulling teeth, if you will. This horn had eyes like the eyes of a man, and you think of a person lusting with his eyes. It could also speak of having vision and surveillance and so forth. Eyes like eyes of a man and a mouth that spoke boastfully. And again, this is one of the characteristics of the Antichrist, the individual. He's going to have a boastful mouth. Again, if you think back to Hitler, whenever I think of Hitler and his Germany, I always picture him before a microphone with his boastful mouth and all the masses being, you know, deceived and excited about what he was declaring about the German race and this, that, and the other thing. Well, this horn comes up among the 10 and it roots out 3 of them. Well, let's get the explanation. We jump ahead in chapter 7 of Daniel to verses 19 to 28. Then I wanted to know the true meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others and most terrifying with its iron teeth and bronze claws, the beast that crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. I also wanted to know about the 10 horns on its head and about the other horn that came up before which three of them fell. So again, that's emphasized. Three of the ten are going to fall to this one that comes up. This is the horn that looked more imposing than the others, that had eyes and a mouth that spoke boastfully. Notice it says now this horn is more imposing than the others. What was our introduction to this horn? Well, back in verse 8, it was a little one, a little horn. But now it's more imposing than the others. So again, I picture this Antichrist sort of being involved in the confederation, manipulating the scene, being very shrewd, and all of a sudden then rising to power and dominating. The analogy to Hitler is quite appropriate too, I think. We say the word Hitler now, and everybody has vile, evil thoughts about him. But in his day, when he rose to power, he was a great statesman. In fact, just about all the other heads of state in Europe welcomed Hitler, were amazed, and whenever they met with him, they were very pleased with what he said and how he handled himself. And when they watched what he did with the country of Germany, they were, you know, just very impressed. Only Winston Churchill had reservations about that man. And I think, again, it foreshadows a lot of the things about the Antichrist. Well, I believe three of the kings, have some reservations about this little one that's getting more and more powerful and imposing. He's got those eyes, and he's got a mouth that speaks boastfully. But now we must turn the tape to side 2.